This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector. Investigative conversations about issues that impact our lives. Be curious. Friday mornings at 9 a.m. only on 101.9 Chai FM.
And we are indeed The Deep Dive, and I am Brooke Spector, and we're live today. And we're interviewing, we have a conversation with Cass Covadia, an old friend. Cass Covadia, many listeners know him by name. Back in the older days, he was an organizer against the old regime and an activist. He didn't carry weapons, but he carried things that were even more important, organizational skills and capabilities and competencies to strike terror in the hearts of lesser people, I would suspect. And then as the new era came into play, he moved adroitly into business and business management. Along the way, I talked with him a couple of years ago when I was writing a book about the Joburg Theater, and Cass had been the principal figure on the governing board of that body. And in the difficult times just after the global financial crisis, 2008-2009, he was able to explain how he had kept the institution together, body and soul, financially. In the meantime, he was in his day job. He was head of the Banking Council, and then he's moved on to BUSA, Business Unity South Africa, which, as its name implies, is an association of businesses from across the country, regardless almost of sector. And now he is involved in something called the B-20. The B-20 is not a jet plane. It's not a new weapon. It's something more interesting and intricate, I think. Cass, welcome. I'm glad to speak with you again. What is the B-20? What are we actually talking about?
Thanks for having me, Brooks. I'm always good to chat to you. The B-20 is essentially the business stream of the G-20. Our government, the South African government, is chairing and hosting the G-20, which is the biggest economies in the world. They took over the hosting and chairing on the 1st of December, and will host and chair until December next year. The B20 is the business stream of that, and BUSA, Business Unity South Africa, is a host, and they've asked me to be the Sherpa for the B20, which is the term used in B20 and G20 lingo. I'm essentially the CEO for the B20. And the B20 brings together business organizations and C-suite executives from businesses in all the G20 countries. And during the course of the year, next year, we will go through a complicated process to discuss policy on critical issues to business and come out with some recommendations to our president, Ramaphosa, in about August next year for consideration by the G20 countries in their policy discussion.
The moment someone says to me Sherpa, and I was in the U.S. government for a long time, and in these international meetings, there was always somebody who was the Sherpa. I have this mental vision, of course, of some guy from Nepal dragging the participants up the side of Mount Everest, whether they want to be up, going up the hill or not, getting them to some point of finality, whether they realize it or not, and then the Sherpa gently backs away so that the other people can take all the credit and get the photograph. Is that really the role? Is that what we're talking about?
Well, I guess that's a fair description. I mean, I climbed Kilimanjaro and was behind a Sherpa and a leader, and that's basically it. So my job is, together with a secretariat that I'm pulling together, to ensure that the various events that the B20 will have, to ensure that in each of 8 task forces and the between 150 and 400 people in each passport, because we have to accommodate all the G20 countries, and we also want to make this an African B20, so we're talking to African CEOs outside of South Africa to include them. And together with the assistance of management consultants and other partners to manage the process of debate and discussion in these task forces to ensure that together with chair and deputy chair and co-chair of the task forces to ensure that we don't get down to the lowest common denominator, we don't get into consensus paralysis kind of thing, and that the recommendation that come out are with the paper that they are written on. So essentially my job is to guide all of that with my secretariat, with the chairs, deputy chairs and co-chairs of the task forces, and with a lot of the knowledge management work and PMO work being done by management consulting agents.
I went to a conversation the other day with something that I think is a parallel body of yours, the T20, and it wasn't about cricket. Gosh, all these acronyms, they sort of jumbled together. The T20 was the secretariat here of think tank.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back. I'm very sorry, listeners, that we had a little technical trouble. I somehow, something, everything on my computer screen went dark all at once. I think it was my cat that did this. They're mysterious creatures. You know, who knows what they do? We're talking with Cass Kovadia, who is part of the B20, which is part of the larger umbrella of the G20. And I know people keep hearing this announcement about South Africa being the chairperson, the chair country of the G20. Within its embrace, there is the B20, which is the business discussion from all the different members. The other day I attended an inaugural meeting for the T20, which is not cricket, but which is about think tanks. In the various G20 countries who are supposed to gather together and create provocative yet concrete papers which speak to actual issues which can be addressed by member states at the plenary meeting that comes in November. How do you, in your group and the T20 group, and what I presume are yet other groups, how do you all interrelate with each other so that you are not tripping over each other's footsteps, but rather, how should we say, coordinating or syncretizing what it is you're doing?
Well, Brooks, as these groups come to the fore, we will certainly try to be in touch with them to see if there are synergies and we can work on those together. We also have been working with and talking to our government, and we've more or less reached agreement on how we'll coordinate with our government. They'll run with G20, we'll run with B20, but we do want to keep them appraised of the policy debates and discussion as they happen at the B20 level, so that when we do hand over to the president in August or September next year, there's no surprises. In a similar way, we want to coordinate and talk to other groupings in the whole G20 environment. And where there are synergies and where we can actually work together, we'd like to explore that. We haven't yet done so. We're still getting all our sort of ducks in a row, if you like. And once we've done that, and we've got our task forces populated and the chairs identified and so on, then we'll start interacting with other groups in the sort of G20 stable, if you like.
I mean, there are people who will argue that this whole thing, this whole vast G20 enterprise, which is actually 19 countries plus two multinational institutions, the African Union and the European Union. Maybe we should run through the names of the country real quickly. Argentina, Australia, Brazil, Canada, China, France, Germany, India, Indonesia, Italy, Japan, Korea, Mexico, Saudi Arabia, South Africa, Russia, Turkey, the United Kingdom, and the U.S., which ends up being about 85% of the global productive capability. Some people argue this is just another expensive party for government ministers and their hangers-on and opportunities for organizations outside of government to sort of get their arrow in for things they would like to see done. Is there anything to that criticism, or is that just sour grapes for not being included?
Well, I guess it depends on how we manage it. So I think certainly from where I sit, we certainly see this as a phenomenal opportunity to interact with, for our C-suite people, to interact with C-suite people in major corporates in the G20 countries. And that interaction happens through the task forces. We also see this as an opportunity to put on the agenda and to promote the investment and other opportunities in South Africa and on the continent. We are also the fourth host consecutively in the southern part of the world after Indonesia, India, Brazil, and now us. And we see this as an opportunity before we hand over to the United States in December 2025. As an opportunity to consolidate some of the priorities of the southern part of the world. And given the geopolitics today, I think that that is something that's important to do. So depending on how you manage this, and in taking over from Brazil, we must say that Brazil, a group called NCI in Brazil, which is the biggest business organization there, has done a phenomenal job. They've really facilitated excellent interaction. They've come out with very, very good policy positions, and what together with Brazil, because we work with them and we work with the U.S. to ensure a smooth handover, what Brazil has put on the table and we want to take forward is that we want these debates in the B20 groups and the recommendation that come out to be fairly implementation and action oriented. So from each of the task forces to say, these are the three things that need to be done in this particular period of time. These are the accountable institutions to do that and to be able to track that so that we can demonstrate, particularly to the economic sector and to businesses, that it's not a talk show, that we have made very firm recommendations and we will try to track those implementation of those recommendations. And we work with the American Chamber of Commerce that's heading it from the U.S. side to see if they are also happy to have that sort of ethos, if you like, in the B20 environment.
The G20 in its original inspiration, we're going back now, what, a quarter of a century or so, this came about, I think, in a global realization that the financial crisis of 1998-99 put economies everywhere at great risk unless there was some sort of cooperation and collaboration beyond the normal day-to-day kind of things. The idea, I guess, was to bring together ministers of finance and central bankers to coordinate policies and line them up together rather than just have the heads of government pose for one of those inevitable pictures with the funny shirts and the scenic background, which is also, you know, a thing. The cynic in me says it wasn't an entirely successful venture back in 1999 in terms of global economics. And it didn't actually rise to the occasion sufficiently in the 2008-2009 financial crisis either, which in a way you could say puts even more importance on the need to do these kinds of things in, as you say, a practical set of real policies with definable outcomes and checkpoints and measures of success. The South African government says that in 2025, their key focus will be global solidarity, sustainable development, and addressing inequality. And then a footnote to that is artificial intelligence and innovation for developing countries is also part of the agenda. Those are very, very big, broad topics. They basically say fixing things. How do you take that kind of agenda and turn it into practical, real things?
Well, look, I guess the governments, the G20 governments, will have to debate amongst themselves how they turn those into real things. Those aren't the things we are focusing on in the B20. Our theme is inclusive economic growth and prosperity through global cooperation. That's the theme we're working on. And we believe that from a business and economics point of view, inclusive growth is important, prosperity is important, and given the geopolitical situation currently, global cooperation is important. We have task forces that range from trade and investment to finance and infrastructure to energy mix and just transition to in business and integrity to skills and employment, agriculture and food security. And those are the things we're going to be focusing on because those are the things that we believe are important to economic growth, important to businesses in the G20 countries. And we believe that we need a policy and legislative environment in those G20 countries that actually enable those things to actually develop. And so we believe that the sorts of things we're looking at in the B20 can be fashioned into very practical, implementable, and actionable items. We'll obviously talk to government, and if they want to talk to us about any of the objectives they are setting for themselves and how they fashion those, obviously, we would participate in those discussions. But we're concentrating on the areas we're focusing on, and we believe those we can make fairly practical.
We're talking with Kasko Vadia, who is a Sherpa for the B20, which is within the G20 universe. And this is the Deep Dive. I'm your host, Brooke Spector. Kas, you mentioned that there'll be lots of coordination with the chair country for the next round, not just the one that is South Africa's term, and that, of course, is the United States. One of the things that has struck me now that Donald Trump has won the election, that his presence at this year, this coming G20 meeting, and all the business people that will come with him, no doubt, presents both opportunities and dangers. It's sort of like a giant thunderstorm that's going to deliver water to a parched land, but at the same time threatens to wash the crops away. And then, of course, that will lead to the American chairing of the session in the year 2026, in which Donald Trump's presence can be presumed to loom even larger. How do you see that evolution?
Well, look, Brooks, as President Ramaphosa said when he was asked about this, that let's wait until Donald Trump gets into office and then let's see what sort of policy positions he puts on the table. There's a lot of rhetoric at the moment. There's a lot of stuff floating around on social media. We can, as South African business, our focus has got to be on what's good for this country, and we will work with our government will work with the American administration to try and promote policies and interaction that are good for South Africa and the US. But obviously, we need to look after our interests. We have a very good relationship with the American Chamber of Commerce in Washington, and we have an MOU with them, and we are quite clear that we will manage businesses' interactions in the U.S. through this relationship between the American Chamber of Commerce and Business Unity South Africa. And we'll just have to take this as the situation develops. One of the problems, in my view, with President-elect Trump is that, you know, his positions are uncertain, we just have to look at what it does.
We're going to have to take another break. This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host. My guest today is Cass Kovadia, the Sherpa, the man who was actually going to lead the B20 forward in its deliberations for the G20. I have lots more questions, but first this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
Now we're live. Okay, here we are. I'm Brooke Spector. I'm your host for The Deep Dive, and my guest today is Cass Kovadia. His newest task, his newest burden, his newest opportunity, he's a Sherpa for the B20, which is a part of the larger edifice that is the G20, which South Africa is now the chair for. The meetings that begin now and go forward until November next year, whereupon they pass the torch to the United States. Cass Kovadia's role is marshaling business ideas, thoughts, analysis to produce reports that are going to have concrete outcomes, arrangements, outcomes, and I guess checkpoints as to how they have been achieved, rather than just the airier think pieces that speak about goodness, light, truth, and justice. You get to explain how we're going to do stuff, and I think that's particularly important. I wonder though, in the current circumstances, an increasingly protectionist world. Among certainly the United States and China, but numerous other countries who are also members of the G20, as well as one member, Russia, that's involved in massive hostilities in Europe itself against a non-member, but nevertheless a large country, Ukraine. How are you going to manage to bridge over both the protectionist impulse and the conflicts that take place? What's the mechanism for doing that?
Yeah, well, I guess that falls more in the G20 sort of arena, but I think that these are difficult issues to handle. That's why the geopolitics are so important. I think that, again, we need to look at and we need to engage with these governments on the basis that if countries to the north say that countries to the south, like ours, need to, you know, have constitutional norms that they follow, have to have open economies, have to have free market economies, and so on, then I think our government has every right to expect the same from countries to the north. I think there needs to be same standards for all the countries in the G20. I think that even from an economic point of view, it would be inappropriate for any country to expect us to play by the rules, if you like, And then the country that we are trading with and that we are interacting with politically do not play by the same rules. So I think that one of the discussions in the G20, in my view, has got to be how do we ensure that there are no double standards? So how do we ensure that if country in the north expects us to play by particular sets of rules, they also play by those sets of rules. Otherwise, it disadvantages us significantly. And I think those are the difficult discussions that will have to be had in the G20. And the conflicts and so on, there are conflicts that a number of G20 countries are involved in at the moment. And those hard discussions need to be had. From the B20 point of view, we would want to navigate our way through the geopolitics to see if we can maintain and grow our relationship with countries in the north, say, as South Africa, while at the same time becoming effective in other conurbations, business conurbations, and economic conurbations that are taking place. We are a small country in the southern part of the world. We need to maintain good relationships with all of our trading and investment partners because we want to attract investment and grow. And that's got to be our sort of formula, if you like.
One thing that perhaps is puzzling some listeners, at least, we're talking in these grand terms of multilateral forums, countries from around the world meeting with the funny shirt, but ultimately talking about major issues and major global phenomena and questions and problems. And then from your slightly narrower perspective, the business relationship to all of that. How does this affect the average person, John Smith, who runs a small restaurant, or Bill Jones, who operates a small transport company, or Sipho Mabuse, who runs a small construction company? How does any of this relate to them?
Well, look, the B20 essentially is about high-level policy discussions in the economic environment. I mean, if we're looking at a direct sort of correlation between the discussion that happened in the B20 and what happens to Sipho Mabuza's restaurant, I don't think you're going to find that. Let's be quite clear about that. But if we don't actually utilize the B20 to influence policies that the G20 governments actually look at going forward, and those policies result in, for instance, just as an argument, increasing tariffs from the US for South African exports, that will have an impact on Mr. Mabuza's restaurant. And so I think that we need to be very clear that there's no direct correlation. But if we fail as the B20 in influencing policies in G20 governments in a way that actually enables businesses in South Africa to grow and to develop, then we'll be failing Mr. Mabuza's restaurant.
I can see one of your position papers now that has a top line that says, although protectionist tariffs represent a policy to protect companies in individual countries, comma, it stifles the possibilities of growth for all manner of businesses
Yeah.
in every country.
Yeah, absolutely.
You can use that
Yeah.
line, it's okay.
Okay, thank you.
Man, I'll type it out. I'll type
I've
it out for
recorded
you.
it.
Okay. Well, I mean, that's in essence, of course, that's the policy debate that's going on in the United States as well,
Yeah.
for its own domestic policies aimed outwardly. And if you're an economic historian, I mean, you can remember that it's a policy debate that goes right back to Alexander Hamilton's time as Secretary of the Treasury in the 1790s, about protecting infant industries and supporting the opportunity for businesses to grow and funds to support domestic improvements, canals, and then later railroads and so forth. And so this, in a way, this is an argument that never quite goes away.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
Chris, I'm very sorry that we're really running short of time.
That's fine.
I have one more message I think I have to read, and then we're going to have to say thank you, and we hope we get a chance to talk to you again once you've started the deliberations. I think that will be very
helpful.
Absolutely.
That would be really helpful.
We've been speaking with Cass Covadia, now a Sherpa for the B20, which is part of the G20, which is going to wash over our shores here. And let me do this message for you for the deep dive as well. The Colail Bookshop in Glen Hazel is going to make this Hanukkah extraordinary. Whatever you need for your Hanukkah observances, all manner of Hanukkah yolk, from silver to olive oil, disposable kits, wicks, lightning kits, dreidels, and treats for the children. Come in. The Colail Bookshop, 17 Northfield Avenue, Glen Hazel. We have been speaking with Cass Covadia, the Banking Council formerly, and then Business Unity South Africa. And now he is also the Grand Sherpa for the B20 of the G20. This is the Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, and I think we're just about, we still have a little more time. I beg your pardon. We're going to go for an ad break, and then we'll sum up.
This is the Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back for our final minutes. I'm sorry, I got a little confused there because of that station, our technical difficulty. My timer went a little bit awry, and we still have a few minutes left. I'm speaking with Cass Covadia, now the Sherpa for the B20. But he's not alone in this task. There are other people involved in this assignment because it is a big task. Cass, could you tell me a little bit about the other people and why they're important in your committee or grouping? Where do they fit in?
Now, Bruce, we're pulling together a secretariat. I pulled in a person by the name of Anthony Costa, who was seconded by Ned Bank to the presidency for a few years, to head up the secretariat on a secondment from Ned Bank. And I thank Ned Bank for that. And we're building a secretariat around that. We already have secondments from a number of corporates like AB InBev, Standard Bank, and others. And we, the co-chairs of the B20 are the chair of Business Unity South Africa, Nkosi Mgojo, and the chair of Business Leadership South Africa, Nonkululeko Nyembele, who also chairs Standard Bank. And then we'll be putting together an SAE Business Advisory Council to work with us, chaired by Busi Mavuso and co-chaired by Kulekani Mate, my successor at BUSA. And we'd be putting together an International Business Advisory Caucus that Brazil also had to do a lot of the advocacy work around the policies and so on. So it's quite a complex structure, but the sort of team that will be working on this will be the co-chairs, the Sherpa, and the secretariat, together with a lot of support from management consulting agencies, multilateral organizations, and others.
So there'll be lots of number crunching and people who know how to do that kind of thing. Yeah. Is there an opportunity, will there be a window or an opportunity for people other than the committee to submit ideas and thoughts once you're established and once you're up and running?
Absolutely. We want to have a number of even public debates and so on during the course of the year on things that come out of committees, task forces, and so on. So we want to make this as interactive as possible and get as much information and knowledge as we can into those debates.
Yeah, I mean, the average person may not be conversant in the laws of supply and demand and comparative advantage and all the rest of it, but they live their life at the mercy of economics just as much as anybody else, and they have thoughts on the matter. And the success, I think, for anybody like yours, really depends on getting the backing, the enthusiasm, even of ordinary and normal citizens who aren't involved in the structures.
That's the thing.
Well, I look forward to having more information about how that
Thank you.
mechanism will proceed as you get organized to do that. I know this is very, very early days for you. I appreciate that.
Sure.
We have been speaking with Cascovadia, one of the important but sometimes unsung heroes of organizing and bringing together ideas on business and government and their relationship. Just a very quick question. How did you make the leap from citizen organizing to banking and business? What if you had a minute to
No.
explain how that happened,
Well,
that would help.
I think that just as we had a political transformation, we needed an economic transformation that's still in process, I guess. And I thought that I could play a role in that.
And you have indeed.
Thank you.
And we now have to say goodbye to Cass, and we will be back again next week with another guest on another theme, same time, same station. This is the Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, your host.